powerful as we welcome you back to the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, online at WTK.com and on iHeartRadio. And usually the voice we just added, you usually hear him on the air here, actually this segment, but on Fridays. But since I'll be sleeping at this time on Friday, and hopefully my friend John Ubakin will be as well, we're not going to have him on. So instead, Larry Lage and I are welcoming John Ubakin in studio. I don't know. Sam might be insulted. Yeah, I don't know if you've ever actually come in studio. No, you did when Three and Out came out. Yeah. So now you're in studio because Fourth and Long is
only
in my
only when
hand.
He's got to sell a book.
Apparently.
Oh, by the way, let's back that one up right now.
I invited
I'm coming
you.
As a favor to my friend Larry Lage, who asked me.
Actually, I asked first.
I asked first. You're right.
I asked
there
first.
There you go.
Because I wanted to copy the book, and I wasn't going to see you last night.
There
so
you go.
Being
nobody here was begging for any cheap PR or any of that stuff. So, Larry, you can take that one back, my good friend from Pioneer.
Well, exactly, and get out of my head. Because
do I
just
to put the
say...
intern between the two of you guys in case the Huron Pioneer blows?
We got Huron Pioneer. We got Michigan State. We got the whole thing going on.
We got Green Hills and Gabriel Richard.
Yes, we had that on this morning, of course.
Yes, so...
I feel so left out.
How do you get four high schools and not get community high school or Skyline?
How does well Skyline? They're a little
young. Doug Karsh. We probably can't have Doug Karsh in the air, but he would give us the community angle.
Yeah, and Skyline would have to be a fairly young person.
Your intern. There you go.
Yeah, and how does so my Walter Johnson doesn't fit into the equation here at all?
Roberto Clemente, is that a high school? Technically, there could be.
There could be.
Aaron Hernandez.
All right, next. That was wrong. Next
that
time.
That was bad. Next come on,
time,
Larry.
Next time.
You're the AP guy. You can't go down there.
The Larry, number is 734-998-1050. That number again is 734-998-1050.
And Larry, so we'll work on the other schools. Next time we have you yes. in, we'll get
yeah,
everybody represented.
I actually digress to say I apologize if anybody was offended by that comment. Roberto Clemente serves a population that needs help. I hope in our horrible budget that we have here in Ann Arbor Public Schools that money is set aside for those young men and women who need a little extra help at Roberto because they need it and we as a society need it. But I'm off that soapbox.
Better safe than Papa Grande.
I'm on to Fourth and Long, The Fight for the Soul of College Football by New York Times bestselling author of Three and Out, John Ubakin, live here in studio. What do you know? What can you say about this book and not get in trouble?
Well, since the official pub date is September 3rd, and we do have an interview lined up with, I'm going to say it briefly, NPR there, where I'm supposed to be more or less keep my mouth shut, but some obvious things we can talk about now anyway. And actually, it wouldn't matter about NPR or anything else at this stage. It just comes out in probably mid to late August, but September 3rd in all stores. I spent the 2012 season with Michigan, Michigan football, Ohio State, Penn State and Northwestern. Got complete access to Penn State. Is certainly one of the things that drives it. The players there were pretty amazing to talk to, and that will be, I'm sure, talked about, no doubt. But I also had I gave a few pages to the University of Chicago and their history. I went to talk to the dean there, who knows their history. They were a charter member of the Big Ten. So basically, if you want to know what it's like to have a Big Ten school that is not like football, Chicago's it. So there you go. And Michigan State gets about four or five pages of love there, Larry. The history, President Hanna, you must know this stuff, I'm sure. He will go down as one of the great educational leaders of all time. What he did at Michigan State is a stunning achievement. And, of course, a few pages on Notre Dame, which is a quasi-Big Ten school, naturally. So all those bounce around, and yeah. So that's what it's all about, and it's an exhausting process, but the final went in on Thursday, so the printing presses started running yesterday, I believe. And I can't get anything back anymore, Larry.
So Amazon.com, can you get reserved copies there now or any
you
place
can.
Like that?
Amazon.com you can. Nicholas Books, you can do it there too. Literati downtown as well.
Actually, I'd like to say Nicholas Book, support your local bookstore.
I'm all for it, absolutely. And Nicholas has been great to us. The last book is their biggest selling book of all time. It actually outstripped the Harry Potter series. Not altogether, but the highest one. So I got one store, Larry, in one store in the world, I have outsold Harry Potter.
You could put the number one up in the air. And when I think number one, I think Anthony Carter, just to continue the trend what we've had today. What did you learn? Was there anything from Three and Out that you learned that helped you in reporting or writing Fourth and Long?
I don't think I could have written Fourth and Long without writing Three and Out first, as far as the shorthand of how the coaches' meetings go, how players interact. That was a great lab for me. 3 years at close range. And you got a week of that, of course, when Rich Rodriguez first showed up. You were there before I was in many ways. And once you're around at that proximity, it looks different. The whole thing looks different up close than it does from far away, and their concerns are different. I'm surprised, for example, when they go over scouting reports, even the best players, they don't know the name of the guy across from them. They know that he's number 47. That's right. All they focus on. Then next week it's, 52, so what do they care? It's things like that. Also, I certainly learned how to be a fly on the wall, which is a separate skill. When you keep scribbling and when you put your notepad down and try to get invisible, for example, when they're throwing a chair, that's a good time to duck.
Right.
So
being a fly on the wall is my favorite role as a reporter.
Really? You've done that. You've done a few stories like that.
And I love it. You talked about the Rich Rodriguez. He gave me all access his first game week. And I think it was Friday at the Campus Inn when you started in with him. Mm-hmm. And I then passed the baton to you, and you carried it for another 3 years. And I cannot imagine how exhausting that was, because I look at the material I had in 1 week to produce a AP story that was like 2,000 words, and you did 3 years. Here's one of my favorite questions as a radio guy once or twice a year. Best part and worst part of being an author. As you see this book in my hands, The Advance Uncorrected Proof, not for sale, we're not quite there yet, but what's the best and the worst part of being an author?
Smart man, Larry Lage, smart man. Dave Pruder, by the way, is another good friend of mine who is both a Pioneer and Michigan State guy. How about that?
Yes.
As an aside.
Great guy.
Good guy, of course. Anyway, best, worst part. The best part for me is that you're never, ever bored. I'm never bored. You're never bored. Ira's never bored. If you're in this business, you're probably never bored. And in my case, I can largely pick and choose the things I want to write about. So I'm not going to pick – I don't get assignments as a such usually. So that's one really cool thing. Two, curiosity. You get to ask the questions. It's not – when I first ask questions, I'm not thinking about the readers. What I'm thinking about is I just want to know. And hopefully my curiosity matches that of the readers, at least enough to make the whole thing work. Now, certain things I'll care about, they won't, and those things get cut as a rule. But, the whole process, you said, is exhausting. That's the downside. And you're in this thing for about 10 months, and you don't get a single day off during the whole process. And then finally you sleep like crazy when you're done, which is what I'm starting to do this week. the worst part is, the hardest part is the things you have to cut. And your 2,000-word piece, which I read very carefully, and that is a great piece, leading up to his first game against Utah, I believe it was, that you when you're that close, you're not sure what's going to be important, so you take way too many notes, you cast a very wide net, and then at the end, of course, you have to cut a ton of it. You have to cut, I've got to cut at least half of what I write, and 80-90% of my notes easily, and I'm sure you did too. So you lose some really good stories. We lost, in this case, some really good set pieces, which maybe I can use down the road elsewhere, but maybe not. Cutting good stuff is painful. People you can't get to, people you want to give more ink to, just tough choices. That's the hardest part for me.
How do you deal with the fact that you know some things that you find out and report on and write about are going to make some people mad or at you?
That is an acquired skill. there are certain reporters who like that, who like stirring it up, who like, getting in people's faces. I'm not one of them. You're not one of them. That said, there are, in the pursuit of finding things, no doubt, some things being found will not please certain people.
The truth will set you free?
Not everybody. Some guys are in jail based on the truth. So it depends on who you are, of course.
And some people don't like the truth.
That's also
true. You can't
true.
Handle the truth.
You, sir, can't handle the truth. No truth handler, you. That's from Sideshow Bob and The Simpsons. But anyway.
Few Good Men was my line.
I know, but they took that line.
I prefer the Sideshow Bob reference, but I like them both.
And you know what's funny?
Well done, Ira.
I can't do any movie or TV references in the modern era, like 10, 20 years, because I don't think you can find somebody who watches fewer movies or TV shows than Larry Lage. And I just...
Movies may be me. TV shows, I can't qualify, but movies may be me.
I should have said me there, by the way. But anyway.
That's all right. Didn't correct you. But anyway, the drill in this one is that you make careful. There you go. You're careful about a few things, and last night we're all with the writers talking about this. you almost never go to the limits of your evidence. A smart lawyer does not stretch, you know, go out to the very end of the twig. It's going to break sooner or later. So you try to hold some stuff in reserve, I think. You're not just trying to go after someone's throat, obviously. Second thing is it's belts and suspenders. You got to make sure you got everything right, left way to, you know, five ways to Sunday. The attorneys at the book level, they go over it. And your hotter stories at AP, I'm sure they also go over. So that's the next thing. And you give them a chance to respond, of course. And sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But in the last book, it still cracks me up. You still see comments on boards that I did not talk to Bill Martin or Michael Rosenberg. I talked to both of them for hours, and their quotes are in the book. Lloyd Carr, as we know, declined to comment, which is his prerogative, certainly. And not everyone this time around chose to comment either. And that's also part of the course. But so long as you give it a fair shot, as it comes across, it's not only accurate, but fair. And the last thing I do there is I have smart readers go over it to see if I've been – does it sound fair? Does it feel fair? What have I missed? Especially those who are close to the situation and might know something I don't know.
Right.
So you try to – you know, there's about four or five different things you've got to do if you know someone's not going to like it. If you do all of those five things, then at that point, you know, you hope you sleep well. That's the main thing.
Yeah, the best stuff never sees the light of day, I find.
That is true. And any lawyer will tell you the same thing, that – the court knocks off half of what is commonly known to be the truth. This is a Scott Turow line. The last thing, of course, is, and the last book qualifies, is that if you did your job right, your best review is crickets, the silence from those who might otherwise bang a pot or pan or file a lawsuit. If they're silent, chances are you got it right.
Yeah, I also think there's a mirror test. Can you look yourself in the mirror and say, I was fair, or I did the best job I could. And if you can, then you sleep at night. And,
that's,
you know,
the mirror test is very good. It's also the flip side is, on that one, is if I wimped out of doing this, why would I be wimping out? Just personal discomfort? If that's the reason, that's not good enough.
Right.
And again, I didn't enjoy a lot of the stuff from the last book, but it was true. And we proved it was true. And so there it is. So if I didn't do that, I would be a PR person, not a journalist. And at that point, I could also not pass the mirror test. So that mirror cuts both ways, man.
We talked about, you know, the best things don't make the book. How is there situations where you're arguing with legal about, like, this is true, we aren't going to get sued, we should run with this? Or is that you just kind of take
the last it? Book, there was more of a tug of war. It was a pleasant one. It was never contentious. That's got to go. This can stay, and so on, back and forth. I try to, you know, fight for a few things, but we cut some potentially interesting subjects. I can say that over a beer, Larry, I could tell you, but not on this air. But this time, legal, and we had all our ducks in a line, and the controversial scenes, we tend to stick to those that we had dozens of witnesses instead of, you know, it's he said, she said kind of stuff, which also protects you as well in these situations. But this time at legal had very, very few questions based on the research that we showed them, which kind of made me nervous. I'm joking, of course. But anyway, the long story short, legal went over it very carefully, and they're content. So
I'm Larry Lage, filling in for Sam Webb on the Michigan Insider. In studio, John U. Bacon, you talked about those that cooperated with you. Are you at liberty to say at this point who was not willing to cooperate or participate?
I can say with broad strokes that Ohio State, Penn State, and Northwestern were very helpful. Michigan State was as well, to the degree that I needed them. Likewise, Notre Dame. Likewise, the University of Chicago. The Michigan Athletic Department made it very clear early on, in no uncertain terms, that they were not going to participate, which is their prerogative. Other people on campus did cooperate and were quite helpful, both within the university and within the town of Ann Arbor, of course. So we're still able to do our work.
Do you think the three and out fallout was why they wouldn't cooperate with the new subject matter?
You would have to ask them, and they were not telling me. I have to tell you flat out that the response from what? From whom? The last book, I recall my friends in the press box asking me before it came out in 2011, well, who's going to like it, who's not going to like it? And I said, man, I can make you two lists of the people I think are going to like it, the people I think are going to be unhappy with it, and you'll have three guys on both sides, we'll have to swap, because you know how these stories go. You're wrong, I mean, a guy you think will be upset is cool. A guy you think is going to be feel pretty good about how I came across will be quite upset, and there's no predicting. So I was surprised by the reaction of some people, not others, with the last book anyway. So this time, so as far as that goes, I'm sure that had an impact with the current athletic director, current athletic department. What happens next, there's no predicting.
Jeff Tadia was on earlier and talked about a mentor he gets together with every year at the Red Hawk. I know you are a mentor to some. Who was your mentor, or who are among your mentors as
well, who was Jeff's first?
Or a person. What'd you say?
Who was Jeff's?
It's a professor from the University of Michigan. I can't recall his name.
Good for him.
It's on the podcast on WTKA.com if you want to hear it.
There you go. I'll check it out. Well, nice drop there, Larry.
Thank you. I'm a professional.
You see this, Ira? He's learning the ropes here pretty fast.
So to take 3.5 hours, he's down. He's a pro.
Well, I can tell you that. Here you go. At Michigan, I had great mentors, and I'm still in touch with all of them, actually. It's pretty amazing, both from the English department as well as from the history department. Those are my two main playgrounds back in the day, and I thank them in the book, as a matter of fact.
Give me some names.
Nick DelBanco, he ran the MFA program. He basically built it into what it is. Great mentor to hundreds. He's produced Bret Easton Ellis, Jay McInerney. He's got a few bestsellers and Hollywood hits on his hands from his former students. Maris Vanofskis is the history department chair for many years. One of my great mentors to this day. He's fantastic in the history department. So those two guys right there, and I'm in touch with them often. So I'm grateful for that, but also I've got writing friends both in town as well as in New York and elsewhere that I always bounce this stuff off of before it goes to press. Just to make sure, and you know how it goes, Larry, they save you from yourself, man. They'll catch things that you thought were funny. No, it's not funny. Things you think are throwaways, they say, no, actually, this is pretty good. You better keep this part.
Everybody needs an editor.
Everyone needs five. And also, by the way, my editor at Simon & Schuster, I followed him from Ferris, Strauss, and Giroux. He did the last book, Thomas Levine. He's fantastic. As good as they come. And he's now at Simon & Schuster. He's the vice president there. And he had the vision of the four schools. And I was getting touchy in January and February because we had so much good stuff from Penn State, which clearly is the lightning rod right now. I got complete access. The players were great. They're really the heroes of the story in many ways. And so I kept on debating, you know, do we have enough from other schools to pull it off? And I got some great interviews in January and February and March from those schools that really helped out a lot. But he had the vision that pulled it through, and I do think the book is unique in that regard because there are a lot of books about one season, one team. I can't recall any books for about four teams, which is one hell of a juggling act, I got to tell you.
How did that work with Penn State letting you in? Did they give you full access, some access?
Full access. Quite amazing. The coaches' meetings, team dinners, all that stuff. Private conversations with the players that really fuel the book, in my opinion. The whole key there was Bill O'Brien, the head coach at Penn State, was generous and trusting, and just so happens he ended up being the national coach of the year, so I think it worked out pretty well for him.
Right.
That's a guy who did an unbelievably good job. And this is where, you know, watching when you watch a coaching staff in the last book under such endless pressure, and you see them crack, and they made mistakes too, Lord knows, and the defense speaks for itself. The last regime. It is hard to be around. It is hard to watch. You'd have to be soulless not to, you know, find that fun. You'd have to be a massive, you know, a sadist, basically. So it's not fun to watch. It's a lot more fun to watch a team win. I can tell you that.
Right.
In fact, I'll say not even close. How about that?
Right.
Now, of course, football coaches being football coaches, the kids go out and party that night. The coaches give themselves about 5 minutes to pat themselves on the back, and they go right in to look at film at Saturday night. So, I mean, they enjoyed it for half an hour, basically. But that certainly beats a loss, man. Those guys lose at that level. And the salaries are crazy, no question about it. But, man, as we said last night, Larry, I would not trade with any of these guys.
To switch gears a little bit, we were talking earlier in the show about vacations. And now that you are out of the book writing business and now in the promotion business, when you can take a vacation in state, let's say you could only take one more, where would you go? And how about out of state?
In state, my balcony. Just kidding.
That's a good spot.
That is one of my favorite vacation spots in Ann Arbor, actually.
There you go.
I have not been on the balcony, by the way.
That's a sin. That's a sin. I've invited you, though.
Yes.
You've gotten a few invitations. Up north, absolutely.
Give me a place.
Well, parents' place is on Torch Lakes. That's
very nice.
Hard to beat that one, of course. My grandfather, God bless him, bought the land about 60 years ago for about $5,000. On the one hand, you say, man, great. Thank God you did that. On the other hand, it's like, man, why didn't you buy more?
Right.
Because it's more than $5,000 now, it turns out. But that's a great place to go.
You know, this city's forefathers named Worcester Park after my great-grandfather, and I have said, man, too bad they didn't give us that land. That would be a sweet house up there right at the top where the playground is.
It could be called Lage Estates.
Yes. And before the trees grew up, you could have had a spectacular view of downtown.
There you go.
I can't really hate on that. Okay, outside of the state or country?
I love Chicago, of course. I'm there most of the summer, as it turns out, including this weekend. Great city. Great city in the summertime also. The worse a city's winters, the crazier they go in the summer. Montreal goes crazy. Minneapolis goes crazy. Chicago goes crazy. I've heard Stockholm goes crazy. They have to. You get 3-4 months. So, I've been a ton of places. Boy, Denver I always like. I like to ski, of course, but Denver, the city, is a blast. Usually what I'm doing is I'm doing business travel where I tack on a couple of days. New York is always fun, but it's not relaxing.
Right.
You couldn't
say that.
Good place
to visit. Yeah, that,
I've heard that. Good place to visit. You don't want to live there. What else? I go to Florida, of course. Everyone does, but Florida's not special to me, I got to tell you. It's nice to get away from the snow. Covering spring training, and I know you do this every spring, that's the way to go, baby. You get 2 weeks down there in Lakeland. Life is pretty good.
It's a good gig, which I gave up 3 years ago when AP finally got me help with Noah Trister. So that's his gig now. But I did enjoy my time in Lakeland and the sleepy towns in between the different spots. John, we appreciate you coming on.
My pleasure, Larry.
In studio. Best of luck with the book and everything else. And if you're in a witness protection program, we'll know why.
Larry, thank you very much for that. All I ask, again, Larry, you know my drill. All I ask is just avenge my death. That's all I ever ask.
Exactly.
So I'm trusting you, Larry, on that one.
What's on the epitaph?
What's on the epitaph?
Just in case. What do you want written, just in case?
How about Veritas?
Anything on the Bacon blog?
Not this week. Last week we did Kid Games, which I know you can relate to.
That was some good stuff. If you haven't read the Bacon blog last week, if nothing else, it's like a good July 4th holiday
Vic's
week.
Vic's Bacon
reading.
Lot. You remember that show on ESPN? Like when ESPN first started, they had a TV show about kids' games. Like, kids would tell Vic, a tennis guy, Vic Braden maybe, about their game, and they would then play it on the show. Now, this is way back.
I don't think all of them could be done that way.
The games
we played, no lawyer would ever let you do.
That's the point.
Lawn darts, gasoline, yeah,
John,
Bible
you talked
rockets,
about legal department
bikes.
In the book. Could you imagine the TV show now, if that show that he's talking about, Vic's Playground or whatever, if they tried to do that now, there would be a lawyer standing over as the kid's telling you about the game, and the lawyer's saying, nope, can't do that one.
Yeah.
Then the next kid would line up and say, this is our game, and the lawyer would say, nope, can't do that
on
one.
On the Bacon Bug, the last time I said, please, for the love of God, do not try any of these games at home. I am not legally responsible. Larry, gasoline, bottle rockets, BB guns, mini bikes, lawn jarts,
Right. Yeah, bad
news.
We
used to have firework wars, and I still am thankful I was wearing a hoodie because a Roman candle hit me in the neck, and it just singed a little bit on my neck through the hoodie.
Sweatshirt.
But
wow.
The safe game for kids that we used to play was called tennis baseball. At Almendinger Park on the tennis court, you'd pitch with a tennis ball. The other guy's on the baseline. If he hits it over the net, it's a single. The fence is a double. Over is a home run. On that same court, I played tennis with Shaky Jake.
Wow.
Shaky Dude. Jake used to mow the lawn at the corner of Edgewood and Pauline, and one time in his suit, plastic rings and all, he said, "Can I play with you guys?" And I played tennis with Shaky Dake at Almendinger Park.
Dude,
that is maybe the best story I've ever heard on this radio station.
There you go. It is ridiculous.
I don't think you can beat playing that. Playing
absolutely,
with Shaky Dake.
Absolutely true.
Why have you not written this one up?
I just saving the good stuff for the radio.
There you go, but it's got to be a longer story than that.
You know what this sounds like? This sounds like a one-on-one interview for the Bacon blog in a few weeks.
It might be. Now, the question is, Larry, has he got a backhand? What is he working out there?
His side-to-side quickness wasn't what you'd want it to be.
He's probably 90, so yeah.
But he did have a nice overhand.
Really?
Yes.
He can hit the ball.
Yeah,
he had a little length.
I think he took off his fur coat.
It'd be July, right.
Rest in peace, Shaky. I break for Jake.
Shaky Jake was the man.
I did too. You
Long
got it.
Oh, we all did.
Old school Ann Arbor stories. John, you Bacon, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Bakes.
Good luck with the book.
Larry, thank you very much. Always a pleasure.
All right, stay tuned because after the break, we'll have another Ann Arbor area guy, Nick Consonica, awesome NHL writer for Yahoo Sports, joining us on the Dexter Builders phone line. You're listening to Sports Talk 1050 WT.